Hi everyone! Left to our own devices, the conference may be over, but you can still watch the recording at cybellum.com/conference. Tune in to listen to FDA updates from FDA executives themselves, learn about AI in automotive from NVIDIA, the AI leader, and listen to product security leaders from Philips, Honeywell, CISA, and more. Go to cybellum.com/conference and watch the recording for free. See you at the next event!
Hi, this is David.
And this is Shlomi.
And you've tuned into Left to Our Own Devices,
the Product Security Podcast. All right, so let's get going. Our guest today is Gonen Barkan. Gonen is currently the Chief Radar Officer at Arbe, responsible for radar technology and future product strategy. Mr. Barkan has more than 23 years of experience in communication, IoT, radar, chip design, and the automotive industry. Prior to joining Arbe from 2016 to 2022, Mr. Barkan led the radar technology and development for General Motors globally, focusing on future retail autonomy programs such as future Super Cruise, Ultra Cruise, and in-house development of imaging radars for Cruise LLC autonomous robotaxi in San Francisco. Prior to joining GM from 1999 to 2013, Mr. Barkan led architecture, hardware, software, and ASIC development at startup companies in the fields of communication, power line communication, IoT, and cellular. So we're very excited to have him on today. Gonen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Very excited to be here.
We're very happy to have you here. So on your website, it says that Arbe is standout for the imaging radar chipset together with Tier 1 and OEMs. Innovative technology are delivering unrivaled safety. So that got me curious. How does Arbe's radar technology improve the safety of cars?
There are many aspects of Arbe's technology that differentiate it from current radar technology. But I think the fundamental is, unlike the common notion that radars are mature, you know, it's been here from World War II, right? The automotive radar is far from being mature. And the fundamental difference in Arbe's technology is the physics. It simply has the physics to provide the rich, detailed image of the world required for autonomous driving and ADAS. Now, if you want to do the camera parallel of it, imagine trying to do autonomous driving with a 0.3 megapixel, a small processor, and a small lens, okay? And it's a camera, yeah, it is mature, but there's a limit. There must be some physics around it. You have to have enough pixels, enough aperture in your lens, and enough processing to be able to see a kid from 200 meters, right? So there's basic physics around it. None of the current radar technology is even remotely close to meeting those physics. And that's very easy to check, okay? So what they do, they try to compensate with very strong assumption about the usage, about the environment, about the objects, and about what they can filter out. And this is how they manage to somehow get reasonable results, maybe for the basic ADAS applications. Arbe has, it's the first time you have in a commercial cost for retail, right, comparable cost to the radars on the market, that you have the physics in your hand. We have 10 times more antennas, which is maybe the equivalent to pixels and lens, and 10 times more processing power than comparable radars on the market for the same price. Which is the one big, there's more topics, but that's the one big aspect that for the first time you have the physics to support it. So you don't need to make any pre-assumptions. You're able to get a rich image of the world at low latency and of much more complex scenarios. And that's the basics of getting good, safe performance from your features.
Very interesting.
Wow. I'll tell you, a lot of that went right over my head, but that's okay. I'm sure many of our listeners actually understood it. So what are the specific security measures that Arbe has taken to protect its radar sensors from cyber attacks?
I was lucky enough to do a cyber research during my time at GM on radars specifically, because not just like any other sensor, they're not just susceptible to digital attacks, right? but also physical attacks, what's called spoofing in the sensor domain. From the standard digital approach, then now with software-defined vehicles becoming a reality, all the strictest and most advanced cybersecurity standards are applied to radars also. And Arbe is a chip company, so within our processor, we have a security processor, meets all the requirements, all the standards. This is part of the automotive requirements, which is probably one of the more strict ones. So that's on the digital part. The spoofing is much more, I don't think, not well regarded in the industry. So we've all seen camera systems, you know, vision-centric system being fooled by posters, printed stop signs by moon, and people are actually stopping the Waymo cars at San Francisco by placing a traffic cone on the hood, right? It's very easy and very cheap and very simple to spoof a vision system. Okay, now radar is very different. It operates at 80 gigahertz. It is extremely hard for the common attacker to attack a 80 gigahertz system. It's very expensive to build a spoofing device. And definitely it's extremely expensive to try to spoof it, not just to jam it or to disturb it, but to actually cause it to understand something differently. So we take it into account, of course, into our design. So specifically our design, unlike most radars in the industry, use a very narrow beam which hops in frequency randomly. So it's very hard, it's very immune to attacks, to RF spoofing attacks. And this is part of the whole approach to secure sensing, not just the digital part, but also the RF part. And in this regard, I think radars are much more immune than cameras.
So I have a follow-up on that, if that's okay. So
sure.
You're attaching to the ECU, basically, or via some kind of channel to the ECU?
So Arbe has its own processing unit, radar processing unit. We have a chipset that is comprised from the transmit elements, the receive elements, and a processor. So this processor has a unique radar processor, just like an ISP in cameras, for those who are familiar with it. So you had all the heavy lifting of the processing is done with a unique processor. And of course, there is it's a multi-core, so it has a security processor, safety processor, and also DSPs for customers to put their own application. Everything is in the radar itself. And of course, we can output, you know, depending on which connectivity we have on the vehicles, a lot of data back to the central compute and do further processing. So it really depends on the vehicle architecture. So a lot of the safe cybersecurity elements are implemented on a very low level from the RF through the basic processing. We have detectors that indicate if something looks wrong in the image, doesn't make sense, irregularities. So we provide early warning to whomever using the sensor that something may be wrong on the image you get.
So you have to have some kind of also security in place then between the communicating mechanism into your system, into your processing unit.
Yeah, that's part of the standard. You have lockstep processor, you have a lot of monitors on the way. This is well defined within the standard.
I have a little funny story about what you just talked about. So a few years ago, I bought a car that had an auto braking system, as many of them do. I won't say which manufacturer because we are in the automotive industry. I don't want to call anyone out. But a few months after I got it, the car just randomly stopped in the middle of the road. Luckily, it was in the city and not on a highway, but it just thought it recognized something in front of me and stopped. So, of course, I took the video that I had on the front dash camera and I analyzed it, tried to see if there was something there. There was nothing. I took it to the garage, and of course, they were completely clueless. They didn't know what to tell me. They looked at the logs, by the way. They were very professional, but they couldn't find anything or any reason. And up until this day, I have no idea what happened there. Was it a software malfunction, a hardware malfunction, cyber attack? I have no idea. Yeah, I guess they didn't use your technology. So,
and maybe I can help with it. This is, I think, the fundamental problem with current day's technology. And I'll try to take, I should not only rate a guy as well understand it. Okay, think about if you have a camera, but it's very low pixelized. Okay, very low, but everything is pixelized and fuzzy. Okay, so very easily, an object that it may be on the road may appear in front of you, or maybe something in the side of the doors, you may think it's in front of you. okay? Because the image is fuzzy. The same thing happens when you don't have sufficient antenna elements on a radar. And again, it's physics. You cannot defy it. It's just a matter of how you sample the space. If you don't sample the space with sufficient elements, that's what happens. What happened is the guesstimation system. Okay, he said, well, that's what I said about pre-assumption. Okay, I'm assuming there's no kid there because how many kids do you see on the highway? And it's not by case that it happened. You're in urban scenarios. Because in urban scenarios, you have much more returns from very not well-defined objects compared to highways. Okay, so all those pre-assumptions simply break. Okay, and this is where the disadvantages of the low-end technologies comes to place. And I'm pretty sure that the radar you had no more than 3 transmitters, 4 receivers. Okay, that's about 99% of radars today. Okay, Arbit has 48 by 48. And you need to multiply it. So it's 12 against 2300. And that's the equivalent to pixel if you want. Okay, so it's 0.3 versus maybe 20 megapixel. Okay, that's maybe the best equivalent I can provide. So again, it could be a software malfunction, of course, but that's fundamentally the physics is not there. And definitely not in urban scenario when all the pre-assumptions fail.
I'll make sure my next car has your tech in it. Then
you don't even know what it was like growing up in like the 60s and 70s, because I had a 67 Plymouth, and when it stalled, it kept going, but the brakes stopped working. So essentially, if you're going downhill and you stall, and it did happen to me, I was coming to a place where, like an intersection, and I turned left and I just managed to barely miss the car coming the other direction into a street which was going uphill. So I stopped. Not as bad as stopping in the middle of the road, maybe, but I shouldn't have said the name of the company, but they don't exist anymore, do they? So
it's okay. Your story is from a long time ago. Mine is actually a modern car. To continue that, I'm curious, Gonen, how does Arbe work with its customers to ensure that their vehicles are secure when your technology is integrated into the vehicle? Because as we all know, once our product leaves the factory, it gets very difficult to make sure sometimes that security is in check. So how do you do that?
Yeah, okay. I was lucky enough to work on both ends. So I worked a lot of years at the OEM that is the one who's, there's a saying like beat a supplier. You beat a supplier until it meets all the spec. And now on the other side, and luckily in the middle, we have the tier ones because Arbe is a tier two company. We design radars, but eventually we sell a chipset that a tier one can take and build its own antenna, its own algorithm, its own trade-off. For example, an OEM that wants to do, this is another big advantage of our technology versus maybe other companies who sell, full radar. If an OEM wants to, like BMW and Mercedes, they want to launch, traffic jam features so they can optimize, speed against resolution. But someone else wants to launch a highway feature, he can trade off speed versus field of view because, for example, in highway, you need very narrow field of view. Okay, so Arbe sells the chipset itself, not the full radar. So the tier one is the one who's responsible in front of the OEM to meet all the cybersecurity, safety, production, durability, etc., all the requirements. That's the tier one job. Arbe has 3 official tier ones who adopted already its technology. And of course, we're working on more. Two in China, Hirain and Weifu, and we have Magna, who just bought Veoneer in the western part. And we're helping them meet the cybersecurity requirements by providing our artifacts that relate to the processor. For example, running the software on a lockstep architecture, meeting all the safety standards, ISO, whatever, and we provide those artifacts to our tier ones, and they complete it to a full system and provide it to the OEM. And they're responsible, for example, for integration of the vehicle, that also behind the bumper, the performance are maintained, and it meets vibration, durability, and speed, etc., and over time. So that's usually the tier one responsibility. And of course, we support them in all the IC-related topics that we sell.
Okay. So based on that and the work that you're doing there on security, what are your thoughts of the future of automotive security when it's going to be, mostly autonomous vehicles, and maybe we'll have these flying buggies or whatever. We just did recently a test in Tel Aviv, right, of a flying taxi. By the way, did you ever see the Jetsons?
No.
Going up? Or?
No.
Okay. No. So I'll have to send you a link. It was a futuristic
Please
cartoon
do.
Where they had the cars, you know, flying around, and they had basically it was smart cities, smart homes. Everything we're starting to see happen today. So it's like a mantra for our program here because it's definitely happening. So what are your thoughts on the future of automotive security, and how do you see Arbe playing a role in that?
So I think first and foremost, I think the critical thing is don't make assumptions that you know what's good enough. You have to have the physics in place, and you have to have sufficient redundancy. And not just redundancy, but also diversity, especially for sensing in your system. I think that's fundamentally, that's the most important part. And especially in domains where nobody knows how will an autonomous personal car will look like in 10 years, in 5 years, but they're putting the technology now, right? It's very hard, you know, for the industry to make this leap. Because it looks like we can do pretty well with, you know, camera or cheaper sensors or lower compute. And it's very tempting. But to really get into safe ADAS features and make sure it lasts on things that you have never thought you're going to do and be able to provide additional value to your customer over time, you must have the physics in place. Whatever was good enough for very basic ADAS at expensive cars will not be sufficient going forward. I think that's the most fundamental thing. The whole standards and digital part of it, I think, is well understood. It's just a matter of adopting it. I think the car industry is actually following the other industries. And of course, the whole spoofing element must be taken much more seriously, because once it becomes... Today, it's hard to spoof systems because they don't do much. They just beep. I think going forward, it's something that will have to be taken more seriously on the sensing side.
Yeah, I heard an article recently, or read an article about in San Francisco, where they were spoofing with the cones because they were upset with the accidents, or that the cars had just stopped in the middle of the road and you know, caused a lot of traffic jams. So there were activists that came out and really tried to cause some havoc with the cones and spoofing.
Yeah. And in San Francisco, people would just lie in front of the car and no sensor could see them because they were under the front bumper. And the vehicle could not know if they can drive forward or not.
Well, that is risky.
Well, but some people thought it's worthwhile.
In San Francisco, I've seen a lot of people laying down on the streets and on the roads recently. So,
yeah, so maybe they thought they could sue or something.
I can really connect to what you said, Gonen, also on a personal level, not just on a business level, simply because I think that we have an opportunity now as an industry to really almost entirely eliminate accidents, right, or incidents. Putting the right technology in place, it's not a nice to have. It's just a basis for everything that will come out eventually. And in these safety critical systems like a car, you really have no room for error. So I completely relate to that. And on that note, can you share with us any specific examples of how Arbe's radar technology has been used to prevent accidents or crimes or anything of that sort?
Well, currently you cannot buy Arbe equipped radar on the retail. That we're still not there. Our tier ones are beating as we speak to all the OEMs and you know, the pace of the industry. So I believe that until you could buy such a vehicle, probably will take a year or two. And if we mentioned before, the way to handle the missing physics in current radars, and I have to admit that the industry is doing pretty good things with what they have. But what happens is that you make a lot of strong assumptions about the scenario, and it takes you a lot of time. There's a lot of latency until you get sufficient data to make a decision in good reliability. And I think fundamentally, once you have the physics, not only that you can handle much more cases, you can do it faster, much faster at low latency. You know, most of features today, the advanced features are vision-based. Look, I'm driving my daughter to school eastwards every morning. None of the ADAS features are working. They're not all not available because the sun is very low. And that's not even spoofing, right? that's naturally spoofing. So I think inherently what happened today, the radars are not good enough. They're not good enough, so they're not relied on. Not used, the feature remains vision-based. And it never ends, right? I think Arbis technology is the first one. And believe me, at GM, I was responsible for all the radar technology. I know all the alternatives in the market. I know the people, I know the technology, I know everyone. That's the only technology that for the first time has the physics to avoid it. And once this is paired with a camera, because radar is strong where camera is weak, and vice versa. When this is paired with a camera, I think our feature will be available at all weather, available all time of day, can support longer ranges, lower, you don't have panic brakes because you've seen things far away. You don't have phantom brakes because, you're not looking at the world through a fuzzy glass, eyeglasses anymore. So I think this pairing is the first time you'll see really safe, usable ADAS for the masses. I think that's our vision eventually. We're not looking for the extreme, L4 luxury cars that maybe 1,000 people would enjoy it. We're looking to make a difference.
With the mass market.
Yeah, mass market by all means.
So by the way, before we get to the next question, how long do you think it will take? We had on the podcast a surgical robot expert, the CEO of Ascensus Surgical, a guy named Anthony Fernando. And I asked him, so they're doing robots for, surgical robots. And I said, so how long will it be before you have the technology in place to actually have those robots do the surgeries by themselves? And he said, the technology is available today, but people aren't ready for it. And so I said, I wonder how long it will take for autonomous vehicles, for people to be ready for autonomous vehicles. So actually, it ties into the next question, which is, what advice would you give to other companies that are developing self-driving cars or other autonomous systems to ensure that their products are secure? And in order, I guess, for people to really have the confidence in being in the backseat of an autonomous vehicle, and maybe with the LGE vision of having the internal of the car being anything you want it to be. So you're in the traffic of San Francisco, but you're actually, out in the hills and, you're relaxing with beautiful green fields around you. Or you could be on the Formula One freeway, raceway going really, really fast, even though you're sitting in traffic.
Yeah, probably playing Candy Crush, most probably.
Yeah, right? Yeah, most probably. So how long will it be for us to be autonomous, and how... what do you recommend other companies that are developing these cars, in order that their products should be secure?
It's a hard prophecy. I mean, as a small story, I entered this industry full force, I think 2013. 2016, I was supposed to put radars on L4 vehicles, and my deadline was 2019 with 300,000 cars a year. 2019. So any prediction, and people put a lot of money on this bet. So I'm going to be very careful about it. But I think, like you see now, Mercedes and BMW started to launch very limited, semi-autonomous L3 features for traffic jam. And you see Tesla trying to do, but by the way, you cannot even take your hands off the wheel with Tesla, right? So, but everybody are trying. I think it's going to be gradual. I think more and more driving features will become available. It's not going to be one and zeros. One day you're going to buy an autonomous car. I think, you have an fully autonomous L5 feature in your car as you speak. You know what it is? What's the feature that you have in your vehicle, which is L5? L5 means every terrain, every day, every time. And it outperforms the driver every time. No. Other driving features. Your automatic gear, right?
Okay.
You don't, right? You don't listen to it, right? You don't listen to it anymore, right? In the beginning, right? You would listen, you would be mad that it doesn't switch gears when it should, right? Today, nobody can outperform your gear manually. It outperforms the driver. So if you're asking what's my recommendation, I think the industry should look at it this way. Choose a feature that is valuable for the driver, like gear shifting, right? That is valuable to the driver, and design your system to outperform the driver.
Mm-hmm.
Not 90% of the driver, not 99% of the driver, 150% better than the driver. it's okay to, you know, not geofence, but let's say limit the feature. No, shifting gears is a very limited feature, right? But I think this is how, if you're going to try to eat the entire cake, then eventually it will be extremely moonshot, it will never happen. And then you learn as you go, okay? But you have to design your features to outperform the driver. If it will not outperform the driver in a well-rounded feature that is valuable for the driver, nobody will buy it, okay? And I think fundamentally what happens today in this industry, if I bring it to my domain, the sensing, camera is so easy and so fast that people just rely on it to launch something, right? Because it's a market they have to compete in. But I think if you put the physics in play, put sufficient diversity in your system, in your sensing system, sensing the world, compensate for what all modalities to make sure you have a full rounded capability, combined with well formalizing your target, I think this is how it's going to launch. How long, you know, anybody could guess. I guess by 2030, we'll have relatively more common L3 features. L3, I mean, some of the driving features will be able to outperform the driver at reasonably cost vehicles. Until you could do point-to-point, really, at reasonably cost vehicles, maybe another 10 years.
So I can tell you from last week, the event I was at, which took place in Europe. So I asked a question about the flying cars or the flying taxis, and I asked how many of you in the room are working on these, and nobody raised their hands, but I saw a lot of people moving around, and there was a lot of shuffling in their seats, and I knew that, and I won't say the name as out of respect for the two people that came over to me after the session. They came up to me, and I can just say that, yeah, their cars are very special. I won't go more than that, but they said to me, look, you know, David, there are some things that we just can't talk about. and so I think, you know, that's going to be also a very interesting challenge on the radar side, on the security side, you know, once we're talking about people up in the air, because then we're talking about also, you know, on the road somehow, our line of vision maybe, or maybe it's that we have less competition with birds, we have less competition with other planes, or I don't know, telephone poles. You know, radar seems like it's going to have to be really, really in place to keep people safe once that happens. And I don't think we're that long, maybe 10, 20 years away.
I think that's a reasonable. I personally, I think that I'm following on two flying cars, two companies that I really like. I think air is much easier because much easier to regulate. And you know, kids cannot drive with scooters in the air. Right. So
I came out of a parking lot after, you know, leaving Tel Aviv, and I came out of this the way that you can come out. You can come out if you're a subscriber, you can come out one way, and then there's a place for people to walk, and a scooter came slipping through. I literally came within inches of hitting him. And then I stopped at the light and I said to him, "You really have to be careful. It's your life. I'm not going to die if I hit you." And he said to me, "I was being careful," and I'm thinking, this is the root of the problem. They come zipping out, and they think that's being careful.
Look, my radars were integrated into cruise vehicles at San Francisco. So when you go to integration, you do test drives, and you drive 4 hour, you know, 40 minutes autonomously, rush hour San Francisco. It's crazy. Hoverboards and scooters and e-bikes and pedestrians. Crazy. Dogs, a lot of dogs.
Wow, so seems like a whole other challenge. But then I have a more personal question. What was the most amazing or unbelievable moment you had in your career so far?
Maybe I'll answer it twofold. So from a single point in time, like an event, I hired my first engineer to build the radar team together with Igal Bilic from GM Research at that time. And November 15. Now, we demoed it live, you know, I mean, from zero. We demoed it live at September 16, which is unparalleled to build. And the team didn't have any radar experience at that time. And then Cruise was bought the same year, March 16. And it was demoed in the States. And Cruise management saw it. Exactly at that time, they had a problem with, you know, people hugging their cars, so and cameras could not recognize it, lidars could not recognize it, so they didn't know if they had clearance to move. And we just developed a radar for up to 20 meters for imaging. We would drive under underground parking lot just by radar. Crew CEO, Kyle Vogt, he said, I want 10 of these on my vehicles, put it in the bag. And that spun off the first engineering team at GM Israel to build a radar for Cruz. And it was delivered to Cruz offices December this year, like 3 months later.
Incredible. Wow.
Yeah, that was really, this was the only, you know, research project that turned into a hardware research project that turned into production at Cruz. And the only one who presented that year to GM CEO Murray Barra. So it was, as a point in time, it was really exciting and a turn from research to actual production. Eventually, they don't use it, but it's a different story. From personal perspective in my career, so I did homeschooling for 11 years when my daughter was young. Way before COVID, nobody knew that you could work from home. And I kind of balanced that. I was a home dad together with my wife. And I balanced between this and leading hardware, software, algorithm, chip design team in a startup company in parallel. So balancing the two, I think my personal greatest achievement, one of the big problems in the high-tech industry, you have to sacrifice one, right? So,
well, understanding how important it was to homeschool during COVID. So just out of curiosity, where are your children today?
So they're all grown up, 16, 19, and 22. My smallest daughter is now finishing high school. The other is she's 19. She did Shnat Shirut and now at Otef Aza. And now she's going to the army. My eldest daughter, she's in the university, studying politics and democracy.
With a physics dad like you, homeschooling.
Yeah. Shit. You know, that's part of that is letting them grow to what they want and, you know, being present in their life. This was something I would never miss for a world, even though it held up my career, but other things compensated later on. So
absolutely.
So that's good.
And I think it's very topical, actually.
Sounds incredible. I mean, I can only imagine what it entailed. I taught a little bit of physics when I was in university, but nothing like that. Full homeschooling for years while working in tech. That's incredible. For
sure. Not just in tech, but deep tech, radar. Wow.
Yeah. Incredible. Yeah.
And leading.
As a startup, right? And we literally, I had 3 days where my wife did her PhD. So there was just me and the girls, nobody at home, nobody to help. It was, people would ask me, I would go with my daughter and say, oh, whose daughters are there? Right? What do you mean, mine? I mean, it's like I'm helping or something, like I'm a teacher aide or something. No, they're mine. Come on. Oh, it's very nice that you take them and you play with them. What do you mean? They're my daughters. Come on. But nobody understood it there. Nobody understood why I work from home and is it even feasible? Then came COVID. Everybody had to admit I was right all along. I usually hired a home with a second floor that I can build an office. I had all the equipment, all the technical equipment here in my house. I lived only 10 minutes from work. It was not a matter of commute even. My engineers would come to my house. I would do code review, evaluation, debug session. Then we go out to the yard, drink beers, come back. My daughters knew everyone. They knew the CEO. They would run to his office, would bring them candy and toys. So it was like a family.
I guess when COVID started, you were a very popular guy. You were the only one probably with experience of how to do that remote work thing.
Exactly. The funny thing is that this work from home episode, very long episode, ended 2014. So I worked, you know, Herzliya offices, corporate, every day at the office until COVID. So kind of went back to the origins. For me, that was good.
Right. I have to tell you, listening to this podcast, this episode, and your answers, you know, you're a pioneer in what I believe will be seen to be in the future. We'll look back and say, this is like the next era of transportation. And, you know, you're one of the architects of this next era of transportation. And I'm sure it's going to evolve into a lot more than that, because, you know, it's not going to just be transportation of cars. You know, we're then talking about marine transportation. We're talking about, you know, maybe into robotics and transportation and you know,
trucks,
railways,
logistics.
Everything. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Really incredible.
There's actually a company that in Sweden, Sensrad, that is using our technology also to enrich other industries like boating, perimeter defense, mining equipment, trucking, because they cannot, you know, if it's fog, it cannot stop, right? If it's mining, you know, there's dust all the time. So all the go-to approach that is much easier, which is vision only, they cannot sustain it. Marine implementation, you have a lot of reflection from the water and spray and salt. So vision is definitely not sufficient there. So we do support also other industries, but, and this is why we have a different partner for this. But as I said, our key aspiration is to be mass market and impact as many people as possible, wow, not just be a niche product.
Well, I'm sure you will. And really, thank you very much for being with us today. This is going to be an episode I'm sure that our listeners are really going to enjoy. And you have an incredible background. The work you're doing is amazing. And thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Left to Our Own Devices is brought to you by Cybellum. To learn more, visit cybellum.com.